Carrying a builder can be one of those amazingly daunting tasks. You're really entering into a relationship with only a couple of interactions and playing with a large sum of money. So join us today where we discuss the 8 things that make hiring a builder easier and help you understand which builder is going to be the right fit for you and hopefully deliver you a better product.
Hi, I'm Rebecca.
And I'm Krabeshni.
And welcome to Building with Builders,
our podcast where we believe that building is fun.
Super fun.
So much fun.
Build Her Collective was created to help women with building and renovating. And we believe that with the right tools, everyone can build. For us, it's all about encouraging women to take back control of the building process and really achieve their dreams.
We are women in the building industry. And as developers, builders, and project managers, it's our passion to share everything we know with other women doing the same. And that's why we've created this podcast for you.
So if you love all things building,
you're into design,
keen on the numbers,
about to renovate,
thinking and dreaming of that forever home and what it would look like,
or even developing for profit,
then you've found your family.
Subscribe to our podcast and follow our journey over at buildhercollective.com.au.
Hi guys, I'm Rebecca.
I'm Krabeshni.
And we're from Build Her Collective, and today we are talking to you about hiring a builder. I'm a builder, and Krabeshni is a commercial project manager. And so what that means is that Krabeshni is an expert in hiring builders, and I get hired. Sometimes. Well, now I build for myself, so I don't get hired. It means that we can bring our experience from both sides of that story to the table and kind of talk about things that you can check and how that relationship can go, because we do know that it's daunting and we know there's a lot riding on it, and you do deserve to get someone who's a great fit for you.
Oh, absolutely. Now, we know lots of women or lots of people out there have the option of being an owner builder or hiring a builder. And there's actually a lot of people who are hiring a builder. So when they're about to do that, there's lots of things that you need to think about. But we've narrowed that down to probably like 8 big things that you should think about before you hire a builder. And these things are going to lead you to having a fun and enjoyable experience. So I've worked with loads of builders in my career, I suppose, and I've had good experiences, don't get me wrong, but I've also had some really great ones, and I've walked away making good friendships with builders. And I think when you get that right fit with a builder who gets you and you get them and you have a great chemistry together, you actually get a really great product, because you can rely on someone to bring their expertise to the table, and they can work with you to make sure you're bringing your vision and they're delivering on the vision that you had. So it actually can be a match made in heaven.
It's really removing the stress and the angst out of it, because you have trust on what the other person's going to be delivering and how they're going to be operating. And that, yes, when you come and do a site inspection, this doesn't look quite right, but that's part of the process and they will be fixing it. So there's this kind of lovely kind of give and take in that process. And we've had clients where we've been like that and it's been really fun. And we've had other clients where, you know, for whatever reason, we haven't been a perfect fit and it's just felt like itchy and scratchy the whole way through.
Oh yeah, that's a good way to describe it.
Yeah. And part of that, actually, if I'm reflecting on it, is temperament, their temperament and our temperament and kind of the way we approach things and the way we communicate wasn't well matched.
So what is the one of the first things that you want to do, right? Bit of boring, but there are lots of cowboys out there. And to be honest, those are the horror stories that we hear, that from the cowboys who came in and maybe weren't as qualified or experienced as they should be. So you can actually check that the builder is registered and has a license, a current license with the building authority. So depending on what state you live in, there will be different building authorities that you can actually check that off.
Yeah. And this kind of list is all around the world, but you want to be checking that. I know it feels like it's almost like checking that someone's registered for tax, right?
Yeah.
You're like, you assume that everyone is, but actually some people aren't. So you probably can't assume. So you should always do that little bit of due diligence, but also, sometimes it can raise red flags if you've got suspensions or if you've got disputes or proceedings in there as well. So make sure you check that. Boring, but useful. Also, I guess the big thing when we're comparing, and I don't know if this is necessarily in order, but the big thing that when we're comparing one builder's quote to another builder's quote that we come unstuck with is whether you're comparing apples with apples. right? So when you're hiring a builder, you might have gone out to tender to 5 or 6 different builders. Maybe you've got 4 quotes at the end, and each of those prices will vary in what you get back.
Absolutely. Yeah?
So one of them might be a one-line item. I might just say, quote, $200,000. Great. Another one might itemize everything in great detail, but give you a whole list of exclusions and inclusions. And and so it's your job to decipher what comes back to you and to be able to make sense of it and do, I guess, value adds on the things that are excluded and justify that. But really, that situation shouldn't be happening if you're running the tender correctly.
Part of being part of the design process and working with your architects and your draftspeople is that you'll be surprised how much you pick up by going through that phase with them about what's included in the scope of works and all the questions that will come back to you. The reason that you can get lots of variance in your prices is because there's lots of different interpretations of how things are read in drawings. So one builder might look at something and interpret it one way and price it that way, and another builder might interpret it a different way. And so your job then kind of to figure out, like, what did you want? What are the documents ask them to price, and what have they priced?
That and you might be running the tender yourself as well, right? In which case you need to set up that document. So when you're sending them out, you're getting that, those apples with apples, and you're getting it back in a spreadsheet that's got a way that shows you exactly what that you need to add back and what has been. So it shows you those differences.
Now, your building time frame is also a huge one, and this can vary from builder to builder. And you know, a little bit earlier we spoke about licensing. Well, the thing to remember also is that people can be licensed for different stages or different scales of work. So you might be building something that requires someone to be registered, but you might just be doing something that's more of a simple refurbishment or simple works that's non-structural that you don't need someone to be registered for. So understanding the scale of what you're asking someone to do and who's the appropriate level of builder is right, but also time frames will vary from builder to builder depending on how big they are, so how many resources they have. And the example of that is, are they just a single builder who's licensed, who's on the tools themselves? They'll take longer to do the job than a builder who perhaps is not on the tools themselves but managing lots of crews of trades. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. And you're paying for different overhead, so it kind of goes and balances with the cost, right? You've got the budget on one side and then you've got the time frame on the other. And so if I put 20 guys on a job, it's going to get done quicker, but there'll be inefficiency, so it might cost more. You layer in someone to supervise that work, and then layer in someone to pay all the accounts, and then layer in someone to run the office, and then we need an office space. So you're going to pay for all of that in that quote. Whereas the guy who's maybe just got licensed, he's on the tools himself, he's kind of organizing things with his mates as he's going, you'll pay less for him, but you are also taking in arguably more risk. Right? You're trusting him to be able to deliver, and there's no one you can go to. You can't go up the chain. You've just got that person. So there'll be someone on that spectrum normally that fits with what you're looking for, and then it's a value and time and money kind of triangle.
Yes. I reckon we should overlay it with enjoyment. Because I think you figure out how you want to do your project and what's going to be enjoyable for you, and then you kind of pick your little niche area. Now, how do you know you're going to work with someone who's capable, who's experienced, and who works well and is going to be pleasant to work with? Well, you can get referrals and recommendations.
Yeah.
This can also be a bit tricky. So, you know, we used to have this little saying when we used to work together, you're only as good as your last job. And generally, that's how it goes in the construction industry, because I think jobs can go really, really, really well for a builder. And then at the end, sometimes they can fall over and that will leave a bad taste in the mouth. So builders and trades, they're going to give you references and referrals that they know are going to be reliably good. Now, there's nothing actually wrong with that, because everyone's situation and each problem that arises can have a ream of different reasons why that arises. And there's always two sides to the story. But one thing you can ask your builder for is a reference and a referral, and you can speak to a past client of theirs to really find out, is that the right fit for you, or how do they work? And you can ask a range of questions to get some understanding of the situations that may have arose.
Yeah, I like to look at it actually and go a slightly different way, getting that recommendation referral. But when I'm interviewing a builder, now I won't do this with people that I'm not actually going to hire. So actually I have, to frame that, I have hired in a past life as well. I was a project manager, and so I dealt with in a QS, so I dealt with a lot of builders in that role. And one of the things that I would do is I would ask them, what are your past projects? Can you give me a list of your last like 4 or 5 projects and what you did on those projects? So they might say, oh, I built a pergola here, or I did an extension here, and I did a knockdown rebuild here, and I did blah, blah, blah. And I might go, okay, well, my project is going to be a knockdown rebuild. So I want to speak to that person. And what that does is it means that I get to dictate who the referral is that I get. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So by going through that process, they've given me all the information because they've told me what the jobs are, and then I get to have a more real conversation with maybe 1 or 2, depending on how much money you're spending. And I also want to see these jobs as well, because in person, people can tell you different things. And maybe, you know, most of us are pretty polite. So if anyone asks me for a referral, I'll probably say positive things, because it's very hard to kind of go, oh, well, that guy never turned up on time. But you might hear things like, oh, look, timing was a bit of an issue. Like, it took a little bit longer. And it's not to say that then you go, oh, well, timing was an issue, so I'm not going to use that person. It's to say, okay, well, how much of an issue is timing? If it's critical you're back in, then maybe it's not a good fit. But there may be a way that you can manage that with the builder that you're hiring, or there may be a way that you can, I guess, mitigate that time frame and kind of work with what your expectations are. Is that what you find, Krabashni?
Yeah, I think that's a great one. It's actually really important to go see a past project, because you'll be astounded by what you'll find, and you can also be really pleasantly surprised. And you can get a range of past projects, one that's just newly completed, but one that's a little bit older, and you'll be able to see straight away the level of quality of the builder and their attention to detail. It will become obvious. You can also adopt this little top tip. You could also adopt this little approach if you're hiring a trade. So getting a referral, going to see a past job of a trade, also is another way to just give yourself the confidence that you're ready to move forward with them. So what are some of the top questions that we think you can ask your builder? Well, what is the timeline of the build? So how long would this build take?
Yeah, are you happy? If you're happy, why or why not? What are the things that are kind of leading to how you feel about that?
Are there variations? So if you're asking for a referral, you might ask them, you know, have there been lots of variations and what caused these?
What lessons did you learn through the build? So this is a really interesting one, because it kind of frames it a different way. What lessons did you learn? They might say, oh, I learned that I needed to give more time to the builder, or I needed to have my fixtures and fittings prepared for when he asks. So it gives you a few clues on how to make your process a little bit easier.
Also gives you an insight into how he works or how she might work, because getting in step with someone else is probably one of the ways that you'll get a good enjoyment working with the builder. Yeah. And if you had one piece of advice hiring, what would it be? And it might be something like, oh, always ring them on a Monday morning. That's when they're best. Never ring them on a Friday afternoon. You know, little things like that about how to work with someone. And if you think about it, when you start working in your own job and you start working with someone, you're going to put in all these things anyway to get to know them and figure out how they like to work. But you're doing the same thing when you're hiring a builder. You are starting a working relationship with them.
You also want to do the background check on that, right? So in every different build, you do a few different things. So that's kind of from the client's perspective. You then want to kind of interview the builder, but in a really non-invasive way is what I'd kind of say. But we have some questions that you could ask them as well, don't we, Krabashni?
Yeah. So you might want to ask them, how long have you been building? Surprisingly easy question to ask.
What types of build you've been doing? What are you passionate about? It's a really good one too. It's like, if you've got someone that's really passionate about mid-century homes and you're asking them to do a townhouse, are they going to really love it? I don't know.
Look, another interesting aspect might be that a builder might have been working predominantly on refurbishments and not really interested in doing a lot of new builds, but they're highly qualified and able to do it. And that doesn't mean that they can't not do a new build. So you really want to make sure you're understanding the full scope of their experience and ability.
Yeah, and I guess even though it doesn't mean that they won't be able to do the job, every type of job you do, you learn different things. From a builder's point of view, you've got a different set of trades. So if I'm building mainly in, let's say, a classical style, right? So then I need to render, it's going to have a lot of mouldings. I'm going to have the trades that work really well for that. I'm going to have the trades that know how to do parquetry flooring. But if I'm working mainly in modern buildings, I'm going to have to try and find new trades. Now, if I haven't used them before, they're not tried and tested. So Sometimes by being able to get someone who fits in with that type of build, you're kind of fast tracking that system because they're already set up to run.
Absolutely. Now, you might want to think about what the build looks like practically. Now, what does that mean? So it's actually about looking a little bit inward to how you like to manage or how you manage your stress and how you manage your life. And that's an important consideration because how you react to things is really important, how you like to work to things, how long you need to make a decision. Because in building, there's going to be time-sensitive decisions that have to be made, and there's going to be longer burn type decisions where you have a long time to make them, but then they're big. And so that can add a different type of pressure. And so I think that you might be getting onto an overarching theme here. There's so many ways to skin the cat, but it's also about picking the right situation for yourself. So you may want to think about how much time do you actually have to contribute to your build?
Yeah, I mean, all of this does come back to you, right? So whilst we're assessing the builder, we're actually assessing a good fit with you and the builder to make sure that it fits with the amount of time you've got, the amount of money you've got, and the amount of energy you've got. You know, if you're someone who's really anxious and you need constant updates, there will be builders that will fit really well for you, but there will also be builders that will not be able to A, cope with you, so it's going to make it hard for them, but it's also going to make it hard for you because they feel like every time you ask a question, you're only asking questions because you're anxious, right? Every time you ask a question, you're second guessing them, and they may not read that really well. And so when that happens, you'll get this kind of bite and this pushback. And really, when we speak to people that have had issues with builders, and look, we do speak to a lot of people, and a lot of people have had issues with builders, and then they come and join us and join our course and kind of learn a different system and a different way to do things. But when we speak to them, often we could spot those early warning signs, like in the beginning. It's just had to get to a point where everyone is, you know, up in arms and frustrated, and there's tears and there's stress, and, you know, before someone will do something about it.
What are the areas that you need to think about? What are some of the areas that you need to really think about? Communication is a huge one. We're big believers on how you communicate with your trades and your builders, because that is the key to all building. Building is actually about building a relationship with someone. So how do you meet with them? How do you control, well, not control the meetings, but how do you notate the meetings, and how do you understand who's got responsibility for something and who's got ownership of decision-making? So getting on the right foot to start off with and having a system in place where you know when you come to site, you know who you're meeting with, you're there and ready and present, and he's there and ready and present, and you're both having a conversation about the same things. You're not trying to grab someone quickly for 5 minutes while they're trying to, you know, finish putting a frame up, and then just ask a quick question and let them go back to their job, because every time that interruption happens can be really frustrating to their daily work. And if you are in the scenario when you're working with a trade who's on the tools also, or a builder who's on the tools, that's going to be hard. And if you're working with a builder who's a larger builder, they're probably managing more than one build, so their time is also important as much as your time, that you arrive on a pre-agreed time and you have a pre-agreed meeting. That means that you can leave that meeting with outcomes and you can move forward and you can move your build forward.
Yeah, for sure. You know, some builders will let you on site, some builders won't let you on site. I guess these are questions that you can ask. You know, what's the dispute management system? Mm-hmm. Like, have you had a dispute and how was it handled? And how did it walk away? Are you still talking to these people or are you not talking to these people?
You know, one of the things to think about is who is going to be on site? Because when you're working through your tender or working through your estimate or your price, often that's someone different to who's actually going to manage your build, particularly if you're working with a bigger builder. So one of the things I used to do when I was hiring builders was actually have a conversation or speak with the site manager who's going to be on that job and just get a handle on who they are, have a chat, get to know them a little bit. Sometimes they'd come to a meeting, sometimes because they're on the tools, I might go to one of their jobs, or sometimes we'd have a phone conversation just to have known that person and get a good feel for how we're going to interact with each other.
Yeah, for sure. So you're actually protected for all these things with contracts. So the contract type that you're using and the way that's set up and what the inclusions are and exclusions are also important. Now, these things can kind of make or break you. You kind of need to understand that it's never used as a weapon, but it can be used as a shield.
Yeah.
So you want that contract to clearly specify what's going to happen throughout the build, who's responsible for what, and cover off any of the extras or variations or inclusions, or provide a mechanism for dealing with anything that isn't resolved. Because building isn't like buying a new car off the rack, right? Mm-hmm. All these pieces need to come together, and they're not going to go together seamlessly. There will be minor hiccups or teething problems along the way. You might dig, you know, and hit rock. You might get some inclement weather, a cyclone or a storm, or, you know, all these things just need to be covered for in the contract. So the builder's protected, but also you're protected, and there's a fair and equitable way to move forward.
Now, you can always get legal advice if you want to have a contract reviewed, and it's particularly if you don't understand terminology or how the mechanisms of the contract work. I reckon one of the most overlooked parts of the build is probably the handover process. Do you agree?
Yeah, and it's interesting because you should understand the handover process from the beginning. That's really, really, really important.
The handover process is going to dictate the way that things go, and whether the builder is more sophisticated or maybe a little bit green and just starting out, they probably won't have, or they might have, a really strict handover process. Now, I tend to hear that this comes from a few times being burned, and they'll start to put systemization in and process, but they want to, and you want them to own the site and own the build until they're actually finished.
Do you know what? The most issues I see in the handover process happen because the builder has been really lovely and they're going, oh, you want to get in early? Well, I've just got these things to do. I guess I'll do them around you if you really have to move in. But I really, really needed 2 more weeks, but you have to move in. I guess we can push that and make that work. And then the client moves in and then, you know, there's dints on the walls and they're like, well, did I dint it when I moved in, or did you dint it beforehand? And then maybe there's a light fitting that needs to be changed or wasn't in time and needed to be put in. And so the electrician comes in, he puts his ladder up and he drops a whole heap of dust on the floor, and that dust then goes in the air and it's made dust on the cupboards. And now who's responsible for cleaning the dust up? Because technically the builder helped you and they have done a site clean, but yes, they've done more work. So that's where it becomes really mucky. And then that process of getting in that 2 weeks early can mean that the process of finishing takes an extra 6 months, because then you're trying to coordinate, you know, trades around people. They can't just drop in at any time during the day. They've got to be there at a given time, which fits in around your family. All these added complexity for that type of scenario. But when you come down to it, the builder was just trying to help the client, but everyone ends up burnt and unhappy and sulky.
Now, defects is probably the other thing that comes up a lot. What is a defect and what's not a defect? There's a defecting process that comes into the handover process. How you go about your defecting process is also really important. But there's also a lot of the time we hear about things that aren't truly actual defects, because there's lots of tolerances. And there are guides out there that are published that can help you. And we often help our builders with figuring out what is a true defect and what isn't a defect. Of course, sometimes there are really big defects that need to be worked through and managed quite carefully. That said, there's also sometimes a lot of things that aren't real defects, that are just variants in materiality or buildability issues, or have been agreed throughout the time and are actually what you're asking for is new work, because you haven't understood what was going to be built or what the intent of the design was.
And that's where clarity, because you've got to understand that time is money, and it can become really tricky for that builder to continually send someone back and pour more money into a project when they're not getting anything back. They don't get to charge more, but they might have to pay the trades more. So just being careful that a defect is a defect and we can try and rectify them in one go. So there's nothing more frustrating than someone giving you a defect list from a builder's point of view. Someone giving you a defect list, it's quite extended or PC, you know, like, here's a defect, here's a defect, like every day or every couple of days they send you a new couple of things. Take the time and the effort to manage it professionally, like you would manage it if you were doing a job, right? So go through from the beginning to the end, defect everything. If you don't know what you're defecting or you're finding this really tricky, then get someone to help you and you can actually get all of these things fixed up, hopefully before you're in there. But once you're in there, you shouldn't have paint defects, right? They should have already been happened, but you might have things like a roof leak or a tap doesn't work properly or the hot and the cold. I've had this one, the hot and the cold are switched the wrong way.
Yeah, I've had that one too. Easy mistake to make.
It's a new project and it hasn't been tried and tested. It hasn't been lived in. So expect those things to happen, but just come at that. It doesn't mean it was a dodgy build. It just means that that process needs to go through and the house needs to breathe and live a little bit to bring out all those teething problems.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a good builder will actually start defecting while they're building. So they'll be defecting their trades as they go through. I worked on one of my favorite past builders. I worked with them and they used to do this thing where we had a practical completion date. Now, this is a bigger builder who's got more resources and not every builder would be able to do something like this. But they had a practical completion date, which they worked towards. And then we had a built-in defects period date. So it was the first 3 weeks after reaching practical completion. What that meant was we were able to go through the build together and prepare a defects list, which we both agreed on. They had 3 weeks to remobilize all their trades to get them to come back to fix up all the pertinent defects, which meant after that 3 week period, what they hadn't got done, they had to arrange through me, but they got pretty much 90% of everything done in that 3 weeks. I was able to release the security back to them, but I was also able to let people move in with peace of mind and knowing that there'll be minimal disruption. So there's lots of ways you can do it and you can organize it. And the sophistication of your builder, the level of your builder and your approach to it will actually help you have a really happy handover process, which is what it's supposed to be.
Now, we understand that you don't do this all the time and you're not like Krabashni, who's managed like umpteen builders and got great systems and processes in place. But that's why we created the course that we created, right? So if you're interested to find out more, we'll pop a link below to Build Her Collective. And there's also a point where you can log in for a free 20-minute chat about your build, what you're looking to do. And we can give you some pointers about, I guess, how to get the right fit in builder or build or where you are on the process and get you one step closer to being in your dream home.
Thanks for listening to Building with Build Her. We'd love for you to spread the word.
For show notes, links and downloads and other awesome resources and freebies, head to buildhercollective.com.au. And don't forget, that's Build Her with an H-E-R.
And if you enjoyed this episode, it would mean so much to both of us if you could take a minute or two to leave a review.
And don't forget to subscribe so you can listen next time as we talk all things building and women making their mark in the building industry.